Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Pei Vav Amud Bet. The Mishnah is really a continuation of the theme that we had started in the Mishnah before, which is the woman's right to Truma Ma'aser in different scenarios. That is, Bat Yisrael, Shenisev the Kohen, Tochal B'Truma. Bat Yisrael that marries a Kohen, she's entitled to Truma because she is married to the Kohen. Over here it's Nisuin. Like the Mishnah Achrona that says that she's only entitled to Truma when she has Nisuin, not just with Erusin. Mate, if he passes away, Velahe Menu Ben, but she has borne him a child from that union, then Tochal, she's still entitled to eat Truma because of that child. Niseit the Levi, after this, she gets married to a Levi, Tochal B'Maser. She's then entitled to eat the maser, disqualified from truma because she married a zar now, and she will be disqualified from truma. Mate, if the Levi passes away, velahe menu ben, and once again she bore a child to this Levi, tochal b'maser, she can continue to eat maser even after the death of her husband. When you say the Yisrael, she gets married to Yisrael now, her third husband gets married to Yisrael, lo tochal, lo b'truma, velo b'maser. Then she's no longer entitled to Truma or Maser. Mate, if her husband passes away, Velahem Enu Ben, and she happens to have a child also from this third husband, Lo Tochal, Lo B'Truma, Velo B'Maser. She's not entitled to Truma or Maser. Mate Benoah, Mi Yisrael. If her son that she bore to the Yisrael then passes away, her husband's already passed away, now the son passes away, then she goes back to Tochal B'Maser. Then she's once again entitled to eat the maser. Mate benami Levi. But then if the son that she bore to the Levi then also passes away, tochal b'truma. Then she goes back to her original status, which is that she was granted the right to truma because of her son to the Kohen. Mate benami Kohen. If the son that she bore to the Kohen then passes away, lo tochal, lo b'truma, velo maser. Then she's back to being a bat Yisrael, where she's not entitled to truma or maser. Now, in the reverse, you have it with a Bat Kohen. A Bat Kohen, she niseit the Yisrael. Bat Kohen, who was entitled to eat Truma until she got married. She niseit the Yisrael. Once she marries Yisrael, lo tochal b'truma. She's no longer entitled to Truma. It won't be just when she niseit, but even when she has Eusin with the spell, she'll already be disqualified from Truma. Mate, if he passes away, velahem enu ben, and she bore a child to the Yisrael, lo tochal b'truma, she does not return to her father's house to eat truma. Nisei the Levi, she then marries a Levi, tochal b'maser, she's entitled to maser because of her marriage to the Levi. Mate, if the Levi dies, velahe menu ben, and she has a child through this second husband, the Levi, tochal b'maser, she continues to eat maser because of that child. Nisei the Kohen, then she marries a third husband who's a Kohen, tochal b'truma because of her marriage to the husband. Mate, if he passes away, velahem enu ben, and she has a child with this Kohen, tochal b'truma, she continues to eat truma because of her son from the Kohen. Mate benami Kohen, if the son that she bore to the Kohen passes away, lo tochal b'truma, she no longer is entitled to truma, she is entitled to ma'aser at that point in time because she reverts back to the Levi or the son of the Levi. Mate benami Levi, if the son from the Levi then dies, lo tochal b'maser, then she loses her right, not only to the truma, but also to the maser now. Mate benami Yisrael, if her first child who came from the Yisrael then passes away, chozer le beit avia, then she's able to go back to her father's house, alzu ne'emar. On this woman, the pasuk says, v'shova el beit avia, kin ne'ureha, elechem avia tochel, that she goes back to her house, like when she was a youngster, and she partakes of the bread of her father's house, meaning that she's entitled to truma again when she goes back to her father's house. So in the Mishnah, you have two scenarios. One scenario where you're starting out with the Bat Yisrael becomes entitled, and then her entitlement is there as long as she has a child with the one who entitled her. But then if she goes ahead and marries someone else, she is disqualified. And a child from that next individual also keeps her disqualified. The other way around in the second half of the Mishnah, which is each one of these cases, the husband is qualifying her. The first one was disqualifying, but then after that, qualifying her, and the son himself will also qualify her. So basically, it is that the latter son governs over here. The latter son governs to the positive side and to the negative side. The latter son determines whether she's still entitled or she's disqualified from what she was entitled before. So in the first case, each time she gets married again and has a son, each of those sons disqualifies her from the previous marriage or what she was entitled to from the previous marriage. In the second scenario, the son that she has entitles her to whatever was true by the marriage. Here, son doesn't literally mean a son. It means a zera, any offspring. Meit binami levi tochal b'truma. In the Mishnah, it says that if her son from the Levi dies, she goes back to eating truma. Dehadra achla mishum bina. So she goes back to eat because of her son, minolon. How do we know that? Now, we have the psukim in the Torah, two psukim in the Torah that are relevant to us from Emor, Perchav Bet, Pasuk, Yud Bet, and Yud Gimel, which is, Bat Kohen, ki tiyel ishzar, hi bitrumata kodoshim lo tochel. So here is a Bat Kohen who marries outside the family. She no longer is entitled to the matnot kihuna that she was entitled while she was part of the family. Ubat Kohen, ki tiyel almana grusha. If she is an almana grusha, bezera ein la, she has no offspring, v'shavel beit avia kidni ureha. Then she goes back to her father's house like when she was a youngster. Mi lechem avia tochel. She partakes in the lechem of her father's house. V'chol zar lo yochol bo. But no zar may partake in the truma. So here you have both directions. You have the woman leaving, when she's a bat kohen, leaving her father's house. And then you have her returning to her father's house after the death of her husband or her children. Now, as far as returning to her father's house, that is explicit in the pasuk that she's entitled. If she doesn't have children or offspring, returns to her father's house, that she's entitled to go back to the truma. What's not clear here is what's going on in our Mishnah, which is after her husband passes away, and then she returns back to, quote-unquote, her previous husband, the son that she bore to the previous husband, that son entitles her. After she loses that entitlement, she goes back there and is re-entitled. That is not mentioned anywhere in the psukim. The truth is, the fact that her son entitles her is also not mentioned here at all. The Gemara takes that for granted, that the son automatically grants her that right, even though that is not as simple as it seems. That probably comes from the fact, it's basically the question about the Mishnah's directions, why does the son entitle her in these cases? Now, in a normal case, we see Bezera Ein La, we know that the Zera disqualifies her. That we do know, that a child disqualifies her, because then she can't go back to Beit Avia. That much we know. The fact that a son entitles her is not so clear. What it seems is that the son basically steps into the shoes of the father. Now, her marrying a Kohen or marrying Israel, all these individuals, there we have what's called Kinyan Kaspo. Kinyan Kaspo, clearly he entitles her to eat in the Truma of his household, or the Levi entitles her into the Maser, because she becomes Kinyan Kaspo, and therefore she has entitlement in these cases. So in the marriage to the husband, we understand why there's entitlement to the truma or to the maser. Disqualified is because if she leaves the house of the Kohen, or she leaves the house of the Levi and marries someone else, it's clear there that she should no longer be entitled to what she had before, because she's now a Kinyan Kaspo of someone else, and she doesn't have that entitlement. But that's with regards to the husband. What's the simplest way to explain it now is to say that the son, when is born, or the child that is born, steps into the shoes of the father and basically maintains her relationship in the estate or to the child of being Kinyan Kaspo. Which is, just like she was the Kinyan Kaspo of the father, she is now the Kinyan Kaspo of the child, because the child steps into the shoes of the father. And therefore she maintains that relationship or that connection to the husband as originally, because it's just maintained by the child. And that's probably how we are mechayev over here. The Ramban, the Ravid discuss different psukim, possibilities within the psukim that give us an indication of the fact that the child can entitle the woman. It's not as simple as it seems, but that the Gemara takes for granted. The Gemara wants to know, once she leaves that child and moves on to a new marriage, and then that marriage dissolves, and she goes back to her old status, how do we know that the child can now entitle her again to truma or to maser? Again, in the psukim, it's clear if she goes back to her father's house. What's not clear when she goes back to her son. For now, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Ava, Amar Rav, Bat, Uvat. It comes from the fact that the Pasuk says Bat, and then it says Uvat. The Vav HaChibur, which is Uvat Kohen Ki Tiyeh Le'ish Zar, He B'Trumot HaKodeshim Lo Tochel, and then Uvat Kohen Ki Tiyeh Almanah Grushav, Zerein La, V'Shavo Beit Avia, K'nurah. So Melechem Avia Tochel, V'Chozer Lo Yochobo. So Uvat has an extra Vav there, which was not necessary. So that Vav comes and teaches us a riboy, that not only is the bat entitled when she goes back to her father's house, she's also entitled when she goes back to her son. So now the Gemara says, who is that according to? So, Keman, Rabbi Akiva, must be like Rabbi Akiva, the Darish Vave, because he is the one who is Doresh, the Vav in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, he's Doresh from a Pasuk that's earlier here in Parshat Amor, which is Uvat Ish Kohen, Ki Techel Its Note. Over there, he dashens uvat, he dashens the extra vav. Tosafot, if you remember, back on Daf Samechet, discussed the fact that even Rabbi Shmuel is Bab Pelukta in Sanhedrin also dashens the vav, just for something else, but he does dashen it. And so therefore, the Tosafot on Samechet was searching for the Chachamim, that are the people who argue on Rabbi Kiva with regards to the drasha of the vav. So back on Samechet, Tosafot discussed that more extensively as to who the Bab Pelukta of Rabbi Akiva are. The Gemara here says, Afilu teime Rabbonan. Even though the Rabbonan generally are not Doresh Tavav, over here they do. Why? Because Kulu Uvat Krayite Ruhu. The entire Uvat is extraneous over here, because the previous Pasuk says, Uvat Kohen Ki Tiyeh Le'ish Zar, He B'Trumat HaKodeshim Lo Tochel. Then the next Pasuk begins, Uvat Kohen. Well, the subject of the previous Pasuk was Uvat Kohen. You could have just started the next Pasuk, Ki Tiyeh Almanah U'Grusha. You don't have to explain who the subject of the sentence is again, because it would have been assumed based on the previous pasuk. And therefore, the vat, the entire thing, is extraneous. And even the chachamim would agree. They don't even have to darshan the vav. They darshan the entire phrase, uvat kohen. And that's enough to teach you that she has entitlement when she goes back to her son. Tara banan, kishi chozeret, chozeret le truma, veinu chozeret le chazev ishok. So now, when she goes back to her father's house, when she goes back to her father's house, we learned this earlier in the Masechta already, she's only chozeret l'truma. She's only entitled to truma when she goes back to her father's house after being married. She does not go back to eating kodoshim kalim, where she participated as part of her father's household in the past, that she does not return to, that she's not entitled to. Why? Why is it that when she returns, she only is entitled to truma, not to kodoshim? The Amoraim, now, we're going to have five different opinions in the Amoraim as to where we learn that from the Psukim. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Ravina Bar Shila Maikra. What's the Pasuk, the source for this? He, Bitrumata Kodoshim Lo Tochel. Bimuram Mina Kodoshim Lo Tochel. So here it says, Bitrumata Kodoshim. One of these words is unnecessary. And therefore, it means, Bimuram Mina Kodoshim Lo Tochel. That which is taken off the Kodoshim, she may not eat. She may not eat here means permanently she may not eat that item. What is muram min ha-kodeshim? What is taken off the kodeshim? What's the truma of the kodeshim? That's the chazev v'shuk that the kohanim are entitled to from the shlamim. So with regards to muram min ha-kodeshim, lo tuchal is permanent. She may not eat them. Once she's left her father's house, that remains intact forever. That never changes. Even when she goes back to her father's house, that means uvat kohen. Ki tiyah, the ishzar, he bitchmata kodashim lo tochel. Lo tochel remains that way and will not go back. Now Rashi does something interesting. He says, you know what the first pasuk was talking about? First pasuk wasn't talking about what we thought. We thought the first pasuk was talking about a case where she marries someone and therefore she is ubat kohen ki tiyah le ishzar. And that's why she's disqualified over here, because she got married to someone and now she's disqualified. Then the next pasuk says, if after being disqualified, she gets divorced or widowed, then she returns to her father's house. That's seemingly the simplest way to interpret the psukim. Rashi says, no, that's not the way that we explain it. But rather, we explain that pasuk earlier in the Masechta, b'nivala l'psula. That's not even the case. Ubat, kohen ki tiyeh le'ishzar, is a case where she had biyah with someone who was posel her. And therefore, she's disqualified from the truma. That disqualification is permanent. Vat kohen ki tiyeh le'ishzar. If she has bi'ah with the ishzar, even though she's not married to him, that disqualifies her. And that disqualification is permanent. She can't go back to her father's house because she's now a psula. that psula disqualifies her forever. Had she had a kosher marriage and then went back to her father's house, she's allowed to eat chuma. But here the problem is not that she got married. The problem is that she had a bia psula that is pusel her. That pusel is permanent. And that's how Rashi says, we're learning out, that also over here, the chumat ha-kodoshim, muram and ha-kodoshim is also permanent. Because that post is talking about permanent disqualification. So that your question is, well, if you take away the simple pshad le-pasuk, how do you know that when she gets married, she's disqualified from chuma? That we know from the next pasuk, which is, bat kuein tia amanau gusha, vizirin la, vishova el beit avia, she returns to her father's house to eat chuma, implies that she wasn't entitled to chuma until then. So the second pasuk we'll talk about a marriage situation. The first, okay, so that we learn out of that first pasuk, which is, there's another case, which is what Rashi says of you, there's another case where she's permanently disqualified. Not with bia psula, but there's another situation where she's permanently disqualified, and that's chumat ha-kodoshim. Now, why does that teach you? What's the chumat ha-kodoshim? Chumat ha-kodoshim was unnecessary. All it had to say in the pasuk was, bat kirin k'tia l'izar, hi ba-kodoshim lo tochel. The kodoshim, or the word kodesh, in the context here, is talking about chuma. So chumat ha-kodoshim was completely unnecessary. So why does the extra word chuma come up over here? To teach you, not, we're talking about kodesh. We're not talking about regular chuma over here. We're talking about chumat ha-kodeshim. Min ha-muram, min ha-kodeshim. That we're talking about chazeh v'shok. Again, back on Samechet, and we learned this. There was a machlokes Rashi and Tosafot as to which word is extraneous and which one would be the default meaning of the pasuk and which one is the extra word. Is the default chuma and therefore the kodeshim is extraneous? Or is the default the kodeshim and therefore the chuma is extraneous? Either way, you end up with the same libud, which is, she's disqualified permanently from the muram and ha-kodoshim, that which is taken off the kodoshim, which is the chazeh vishok. So that's what Rashi says here. Uvat gein tish lezar, that's a disqualification permanently. He b'chumat ha-kodoshim, another permanent disqualification, lo tochel, there she can't eat. In either of those scenarios, she's permanently disqualified. Either because she was nivala l'psul, or because we're talking about kodoshim. In either of those cases, there's a permanent disqualification. Then with Truma, the next pasuk tells us, she gets married, she's disqualified, she comes back to her father's house, she's requalified, she's entitled once again to have Truma. That's Rav Chista's limud. Rav Nachman Amar Rav Ravua says that the limud is, milechem velo kol lechem. He says, the pasuk says that she gets milechem avia. Meh means from amongst the lechem. Now Rashi interprets the word here, lechem, to mean any food item, any type of sustenance. So over here, out of the sustenance that her father gets, she's only entitled to a portion of it. That portion is, prat the chazeh v'shok, she's entitled to chuma, she's not entitled to chazeh v'shok, maybe even a double play on the word lechem, which is, mi lechem avia, from amongst lechem. There we'll interpret lechem to mean anything of sustenance. Then we'll reinterpret also when we say which of the things is lechem. Is the real bread, which is the chuma, and not the chazeh v'shok. So I think you can probably, in that scenario, interpret it both ways to get to the conclusion that you need. So this comes out of left field, and he says, oh, maybe that is to say that, no, she gets chuma, she gets kodeshim, she's just, her father's not entitled to wipe out her nidarim. Why would you ever think that he's entitled to wipe out her nidarim? What in the world over here would even spark your interest in talking about a farat nidarim? So there are two approaches in the Rishonim. One is to say, because it says here, milechem, that her father has the right to grant her lechem or to ensure that she eats. I mean, if she took a neder not to eat, milechem avia, he can seemingly force the situation, allow her to eat the lechem. So that's maybe why we would have thought he has a right to be made for a neder, huh? Or the more likely scenario, which most of the Rishonim bring up, which is the terminology used in the pasuk is vishava beit avia kinni ureha. The same terminology is used in the parshat nidarim, which is kinni ureha beit avia. That same terminology is used, and therefore there might be hinting at the usage of this lashon that we're talking about nidarim over here. So what Rami Bar Chama says is, why don't you say if here the rights that are granted to her to eat truma and to participate in Kodshim Kalim, what is taken away from her is the father's right to be Mayfair Nidareha. Amarova Kfar Paska Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel. That we already know from Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, and we know it because it's so pashut. Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel takes this for granted, doesn't even need a limud to know this, which is the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel. The neder almana grusha, dot, yakum aleha, that a neder of an almana grusha, if she takes a neder, lasor isar, to make herself asur, then yakum aleha, she's stuck with the neder. There's nobody who has the right to make for this neder, because she is an almana grusha. She was already married, the husband's out of the picture, and since the father already gave over to be married, the father's also out of the picture. So there's nobody here. What Tana debate Rabbi Shmuel basically says is, Matam Alomar, why do you have to tell me this? It's so obvious that she's independent, and therefore, why would there be anybody who could be made for another? Valo Mutza Michlal Av, Umutza Michlal Bal. At this point in time, she's not subject to the father's rule. She's not subject to her husband's rule. So then why should there be any Havamina that someone has a right over here? She should be locked into her Nidareen because she's the only one here. So it's so obvious. Basically, that's the answer of Rav over here. It is so obvious that the father has no entitlement to be Mefer Nidareo here. You don't need a pasuk to teach me that. Even here, you don't need the pasuk. Now we're going to go on with Tana de Beirim Shmo. What do they use the pasuk in Nidareem for? But that's the piece that we need, which is to say it's totally obvious that Hafaret Nidareem don't belong to the father after she's already married and gone out of the house. Ella, Hare, Shemasara Av, Lushlechei Abal. The situation here is a case where the Av gave over his daughter to the messengers of the Baal, those proxies of the Baal. The Baal sent proxies to pick up the woman, and the father gives her over to the proxies of the Baal. O Shemasru Shluchei Av, the Shluchei Baal. Or the proxies of the father gave her over to the proxies of the Baal. V'nit ar melau nit gersha baderech. And the husband passes away before she reaches her husband. He passes away or divorces her. So there was never any nisuin. There was never any consummation of the marriage. There was no chuppah. There was no nisuin here. Yet, once the father grants the rights or gives her over to the shluchei abal, or the shluchei av give over to the shluchei abal, he has removed his rights. He's rescinded or relinquished his rights to the girl and given them over to the baal. As far as Hafarat Nedarim is concerned,
no longer in Harish.
The father has now relinquished all possibility. And at that point in time, he moves to the Baal. Now, if the Baal passes away, she's not going back to her father's house, and that's what the Chiddush is over here. So, hey, Echani Kore Ba Beit Aviha. So what I'm going to say, she goes back to Beit Vita Shalzu, or Beit Bala Shalzu. Who does she belong to? Is she part of the Beit Aviha or Beit Bala? Because she's really still in a limbo state. She has Erusin, but she has yet to have Nisuin. On the other hand, the father already gave her over to the proxies of the Baal, which means he relinquished control. So where is she? Elolom Alecha. That's what this pasuk tells you. That as soon as she leaves her father's house, even for an hour, for a minute, as soon as he relinquishes control, he's out of the picture permanently. That's it, it's over. So even in the case where there's no nisuin, nevertheless, once the father relinquished control, he's out, the husband's gone, so he's out as well, she's independent. But in the case where clearly she had erusin, and then kid and nisuin, and then the husband is out of the picture either because he died or he divorces her, then there for sure, it's not even a question to Tana Beir Yishmael that the father has no rights. And that's our case over here. When she goes back to her father's house, she's been fully married to someone who disqualified her from Truma. And then when she goes back to her father's house, there's no question that her father has no rights in the Nidareen. And the Pasuk wouldn't need to tell you that. And so therefore, the Pasuk is available to tell us, yes, Truma, no, Chazeh Vishok. Kerev Safra Amar, here's our third answer. Milechem avia tochel, lechem velo basar. He says very simple. Now he learned lechem literally.
The same way.
Right, but before the lechem was learned as being any sustenance, and he used the mem, which is, means mil lechem. And he says only a portion of the lechem is, she's entitled to. Over here he uses the word lechem to mean literally lechem, which is truma, she's entitled to. Basar, which comes from the kodeshim, she's not entitled to. Fourth answer, Rav Papa Amar, milechem avia tochel, lechem akanui leavia. She's only entitled to things that her father owns. Prat the chazev shog dimishulchan gvoa kazachu versus the chazev shog which are granted to them as shirayim from a kodesh baruch hu basically, which is that truma, the way that the gemara is phrasing over here, which is not necessarily true because there are deot and places in shas where the gemara says that truma is also mishulchan gvoa kazachu, but the simplest view of what the gemara is saying here is that truma is different than kodashim. By truma, that is a gift of the Kohen. It's the property of the Kohen. Hashem said you must give it to the Kohen. But the ownership and the gift is a direct ownership of the Kohen. And we know we have evidence of that because a kohen can be mekadesh and isha with truma. On the other hand, chazev and shok are not the kohens. They really belong to Hashem, but Hashem is sharing with the kohenim what belongs to him. That's which mishulchan kavua kazaku, and therefore he's entitled to eat. He doesn't have ownership. So that'll be the difference. Now, the truth again is that we see the term shulchan kavua used in both cases. So what you have to say is that, nevertheless, the difference is that truma, even though if you're zocha mishulchan kavua, there Hashem grants you full ownership. By the chazev ashok, Hashem only grants you eating rights. He doesn't grant you ownership. And therefore, there's a difference over here. And that's what it means. Milechem avia tochel. She can eat from things that her father owns. She can't eat from things that her father has the right to eat, but doesn't have ownership in them. So that's the fourth answer. And now the Lancaster is, Vivrova amar. Vet chazeh atznufa. Vet shoka truma. Tochlu. Ata. Uvanecha. Uvanatecha. Itach. With you. Bizman she itach. When she's with you, then she eats or participates. This is the chazeh atznufa and shoka truma. This is the truma from the kodeshim. This is the chazeh v'shok of the shlamim. So when she's with you, then she's entitled to it. When she's no longer with you because she got married, then she's no longer entitled, and that's a permanent state. Meaning that only when she's still part of your household is she entitled to it. When she leaves your household and she's no longer yours, she's now someone else's. But she's returned to her father's house. There she will not be entitled. Amar Rav Adarbava, Tana, kishi chozeret lebeit avia, chozeret lechuma, v'ene chozeret lechazeh v'shok, which is what we just proved, which is that when she returns to her father's house, she only gets entitlement to truma, not to chazeh v'shok, but this is the statement here, which is, bishvil bena, chozeret af lechazeh v'shok. When she goes back to her son, not only is she entitled to truma, she's entitled to chazeh v'shok. If she has a son, for sure, she's entitled to truma and chazeh v'shok, because that continues her status as being with her husband. But if she then goes and marries a zar, which disqualifies her from the truma and the chazeh v'shok, if that husband passes away and she has no offspring from him, she will return, because of her son from the kohen, to eating truma and chazeh v'shok. I mean, it's an entitlement that is even greater than the entitlement of her father's house. And on that, also Rav Mordechai Amro the Shmaita to Kamei to Rav Ashi. So Rav Mordechai repeated this over to Rav Ashi. Amar Mehecha Kamitz Rabia. First of all, how do we know that when she goes back to her son, she's entitled, just like when she goes back to her father's house? That we learn out from Bat Uvat. I mean, that was a reboy from the Pasuk. So how could it be that returning to her son is better than returning to her father's house? If the Limud is a reboy from returning to her father's house, then whatever is true by her father's house, that's all that could be true by returning to her son. Can't be more. The Gemara says, "Mi edifa la mina? How could he be better than her?" Hatam tive miute, hachalok tive miute. Says that's the answer. The answer is that over there, when she is returning to her father's house, there are specific miutin that are written over there. So each of those miutim are talking about beit avia. So there, there's a specific miut with regards to her father's house. On the other hand, when it comes to the reboy obat, that is not subject to those miutim, because that's not talking about the father's house. The father's house is a specific miut because the word avia is mentioned over there. And those miutim are specific to avia. But with regards to ubat, which included her son, those miutim are not applicable. Now Tosfot says this only works out according to some of the limudim before. We had 5 limudim before. Not all of them are from this pasuk. That's what Tosfot mentions. Tema the Reed. Bishlom alochol anach humurai didarshi mishar karai. That they learned it out from other psukim. Dichtib hu avia. Sa'at shapir. De miute ktiv gabi avia adavko. Because when the avia is mentioned in context with the miut, then I understand that. Aval the ravina barshila didarish mihi bitchumata kodashim. My mashma da'ai bechozer the beit avia mari. How do you know that that has to do with Trumat HaKodeshim is the previous Pasuk? There's no indication there that's talking about her father's house. So how do you know the Miut is specific about the father? It says, V'yesh Lamar, Kevin Dichtiv Reshet Dekro, Bat Ish Kohen, Nired Bechozer L'Shut Aviyah Mayri. It's implicit in the Pasuk, he says. U'mi Ukash L'man D'Dorish Mi Lechem V'lo Mi Basar. It's Rabbi Yimna, not Mi Ktiv. Because by your son it also says, Yulid Beito, Heim Yochlu B'Lachmo. That the children of his household, they get Lechem. Lechem and not basar? Whoever said that? So how do you have here lechem and not basar? And over there you're going to interpret lechem differently. So Tosfot says, the limudim here are not so foolproof because they seem to work in some instances, not work in other instances. At least two of them he has issues with because of the nature of the limud. And obviously that's why, by the way, you usually have five limudim over here, is because none of them is foolproof. I mean, each of the limudim has a problem associated with it, or it's not straightforward, and therefore you'll get multiple limudim, each of them with a weakness and a strength in their explanation of what's going on here. But our conclusion at this point is, number one is, when a woman marries a zar, whether she's coming from Beit Avia or whether she's coming from entitlement from her husband, if she goes marries a zar, she now is disqualified. Then, if that disqualification disappears, either because the husband passes away, or she doesn't have zera and she doesn't have zera from that husband, then she returns to her previous state, and is then entitled in her father's house, or entitled because of her son that entitled her previously. That entitlement will be with the father's house only for truma, but for her son, both for truma and for kodoshim. So the son has more power than her father's house, and in a sense, based on what I explained to you earlier, it makes sense, which is that we're looking at the son as filling in for the husband. So when the husband, the reason that she's entitled by the husband is because she's kinyan kaspo. By kinyan kaso, that's a full entitlement. That's entitlement to truma and kodeshim. If the child steps into those shoes and entitles her, then he's going to entitle her fully because the entitlement is based on kinyan kaspo here, and that's why the entitlement stays that way. As opposed to Beit Avia, where, again, the entitlement was because of her father, but once she's been dislocated from her father, she loses that entitlement, then we need a specific pasuk to requalify her in that case in the Beit Avia. And over there, we have miutim that tell us that requalification is limited. It's not a full requalification. All right, so now, Tanur Banan. Bishava el Beit Avia. So now, the limudim that tell us basically what we learned in the previous Mishnah as well as this Mishnah, which is Bishava el Beit Avia prat l'shomeret yavam. That's a case to exclude, that excludes a case where she's waiting for Yibum. So we saw in the previous Mishnah, if she was waiting for a Yavam, even though her husband was a Kohen, and the Yavam is a Kohen, she's not entitled to eat Truma in between. Because she has a limbo state now. She might end up being the wife of the Yavam, who will entitle her to Truma. Or if she's the Yisrael, he might disqualify her, so you have to, depends on which one it is. But Beit Avia, she can't go back. She's not entitled to go back to Beit Avia because she still is locked. She's locked because the Shomeret Yavam, the Yavam himself has a certain amount of control in this situation here, because he has to either perform Chalitza or Yibum. If he doesn't grant her Chalitza, she can't go back. So she is not free to return to her father's house, and that's why she's not entitled over there. Kinyu Reha, like she was when she left her father's house, a youngster, Prat Nemiuberet, where she wasn't pregnant. When she's pregnant, she may not return to her father's house, and again, she will be in limbo state, because the Ubar doesn't entitle her until he's born. So again, she'll be stuck. She can't go back to her father's house because she's pregnant. She can't get entitlement from the son yet because the son is not born. It's Yilid Beito. They have to be born. Balo dinhu. The Gemara says, isn't it a kal v'chomer? U'bamam ha'kom shalasa v'lad min ha'rishon, k'v'lad min ha'sheni, l'potra min ha'yibum, asa ubar ki yilot. Over there, a pregnant woman is like a child that is born. Ma'kom shalasa v'lad min ha'rishon, k'v'lad min ha'sheni, l'posla min ha'truma. So here is a kal v'chomer. The Gemara says, why do I need both limudim here? Why do I need the limud of Shomeret Yavam and the limud of Mi'uberet? Because I would make it into a kal v'chomer, which says that Mi'uberet should be entitled in this case. And why is that? Because if you look at the case of Yavam, in the case of Yavam, if she was married twice, she was married to a first individual and had a child from the first individual. Then she marries a second individual, does not have any children from him. In that case, she is obligated in Yibum. So there, the first child does nothing to benefit her, and therefore the second marriage that she had that dissolved here, because her husband passed away without children, will demand that she performs Yibum. So that first child does not protect her. On the other hand, if she is left pregnant at the time that her husband passes away, then she does not have to perform Yibum. She is then disqualified from Yibum because she is pregnant. So you see that by Yibum, pregnancy is the equivalent of having a child. Because being pregnant says no Yibum or Chalitza, and having a child says no Yibum or Chalitza. So by Yibum, we say being pregnant is the equivalent of having a child, and we also say that the first child has no bearing. Move over to Truma. In the case of Truma, if the first husband she has a child with, Then she gets married to the second husband and has no children. If that husband passes away, the first child entitles her. So truma is even more chamor or better in that situation, which is that the first child entitles her, which is not true by yibum. So then you're going to say to me, mi'uberet by truma. Why shouldn't a mu'beret not entitle her by truma? A mu'beret by yibum protects her. Why doesn't a mu'beret protect her or entitle her here by truma? And that's the Gemara's question. Mi'uberet, why are we saying that a mu'beret is in limbo? It doesn't entitle her because not libid beito. Can't go back to beit aviyah because she's not kenirut out. Why don't we say like yibum? And again, the limud from yibum is that a child born to a first husband in yibum, no impact. And yet, an ubar is as if he's born. Truma, a child from a first husband, has impact. Even after the married to the second husband, the first child still has impact if that second husband dies without bearing children with her. So therefore, in that case, certainly the ubar should be yulod. The ubar should be as if it's born. So the Gemara says, lo, it's not a good limud because mali asa ubar ki yulod linyan yibum. There's a kula ba'yibum. The kula ba'yibum is that the dead are as good as alive. Which means that if she had a child while she was married and that child passed away, then her husband passes away, she still has to perform yibum. On the other hand, if she had a child from her husband and when her husband passed away, the child was alive, if the child later passes away, she still doesn't have to perform yibum. She doesn't perform yibum at a later time. But the case by truma, that's not the case. If a woman has a child from the second husband, and then that child passes away, that sends her back to the original husband's child, and she does go back, meaning that the second child passing away after her husband's death has impact by truma. It does not have impact by yibum. And that's what the Gemara is saying. You can't make that kal v'chomer, because ma li asau bar ki yulod. By yibum, you reason a pregnant woman is as if the baby is born. That's because a child who was niftar after the husband is equivalent to a child alive. From that you want to now extrapolate to truma and say that by truma, a pregnant woman is the equivalent of having given birth to the child. Over there, that's not the case. If the child dies after the father, that either disqualifies her, if that was what was qualifying her, or it entitles her because she goes back to her previous state, if that was what was entitling her. So, Talmud Omar, the Pasuk says, Kineura Pratna Mi'uberet. And that's why the Pasuk says, Kineura Pratna Mi'uberet. Now, V'itzrik L'michtav Mi'uberet, V'itzrik L'michtav Zera Ein La. He has to teach us about a pregnant woman, and also has to teach us about the fact that Zera Ein La, that she has no children. Why does it have to teach us both of these cases? The puzzle had just written in Zerein La. This is what I would have thought. Mikarachad Gufa. Originally, she was a single unit. Vashta Tre Gufe. And now she's two units, meaning that's her and her son. Aval Bumberet. Mikarachad Gufa. Vashta Chad Gufa. But a pregnant woman, who originally, when she left her father's house, was a single entity. And when she returns to her father's house, she's still a single entity, because she's only pregnant right now. Therefore, maybe she should. Ematechol. Maybe she should go back to her father's house and eat truma. So tzricha. Therefore, I need the pasuk of mi'uberet, or the exclusion of mi'uberet. V'ikatav rachmanu mi'uberet, had it only taught us the din of mi'uberet, and not zerein la, dimikara gufa tzricha. In the beginning, she was an empty guf, hashta gufa malya. And now she is a guf that's carrying extra with her. That's why, over there, she's disqualified. Of a zerein la, with regards to offspring, Timikara Gufa Srika, when she left her father's house, she was just a plain woman, an empty woman here, but a plain woman. And now, Ashta Gufa Srika. So over here, she's also an empty woman. I mean, the child is separate from her, and she alone, as a standalone woman, looks the same as she did when she left her father's house. So, Amalo. So over there, I would think that Zera in life, she had children, that would not disqualify her from going back. Tricha, therefore I need both cases. I need the case to tell me that when she has children, she's disqualified. And I need the pasuk to tell me that binurah, which prat the mi'uberet, to tell me she's disqualified as a mi'uberet. Now again, we need both of those psukim to tell she's disqualified, even though maybe you would have thought by yibum that since a mi'uberet says it's like giving birth, so too by truma you would think that a mi'uberet is like giving birth. We said that kal v'chomer doesn't work because yibum has a tzad chumrah to it that would changes the dynamic of the relationship between yibum and truma. And maybe the reason it works by yibum is because chayim meitim, or meitim ke chayim. Those that are dead are like the chayim, which is not true by truma. So that's the conclusion of this piece of the Gemara. Now the Gemara is going to basically play around with this Kal Vachomer in all directions and say each time that we know something from the Pasuk, the Gemara is going to go back and try to work the Kal Vachomer again in the other direction to learn something. And basically what the Gemara ends up saying in the end is that every piece of this puzzle has a Pasuk that teaches us the din, and therefore there's no logical argument to be made anymore because of that. So that's what the Gemara says here. Amalei Rav Yehuda mi diskarta l'rova. Lo nase meitim kechayim linin yibum mikal v'chomer. Let us say now that what we know about truma, that from a kal v'chomer we'll say the same is true by yibum, which is umam akum she'asav v'lai min rishon kevlai min hasheni l'poslam min truma. In the case by truma, where her first child from the first husband has impact after her second husband passes away and is poseller from the truma, lo asa meitim kechayim. Over there, if someone passes away, they don't have a status like someone who's alive. By yibum, where we don't say such a thing, to say that the child from the first husband protects her from yibum from the second husband, that we don't say. Certainly then, by yibum, you should also say that if a child passes away, then it shouldn't be like he's alive. If the child passes away after the father or the husband passes away, that child should be lost now, and she'd have to perform yibum. Just like by truma, the child that passes away is no longer relevant. So to over here, by yibum, the child that passes away should no longer be relevant as a kal v'chomer, because truma has a chumrah with regards to the first husband's child that is not there by yibum, where the first husband's child has no impact. So that chumrah should teach us a kal v'chomer that, again, meitim should not have the status of chayim. Talmud Omar, Diracheha, Darchei Noam, V'chon Netivodeh Shalom. The ways of the Torah are pleasant. Now what is meant by this is that if we tell the woman that if her son passes away, she now is obligated in Yibum, you're going to have a crazy situation in which the woman's husband passes away, she has a child. So she's free. She doesn't need Yibum, she doesn't need Chalitza. She goes off and gets married. Now after she's married, her son passes away. His son passes away, now she's obligated in Yibum or Chalitza. Or Yibum, she can't perform, she's already married. But, let her perform Chalitza at that time, that's totally unpleasant. For the second husband, that's gonna make him feel like he was living the Isser with her until this time, because she really needed Chalitza. And she really needed Chalitza, that's not Darchei Darchei Noam. Now, the principle being invoked over here, Darchei Darchei Noam, is not so simple, because there are times by the case of Yivama that it doesn't work out so well for the Yivama. It's not always peaches and cream over here for the Yivama, and so that we are going to invoke it over here and say it's peaches and cream. Either you have to say Darchei Darchei Noam over here, it becomes unreasonable, which is that how is this woman to know what the outcome is going to be because the child might die? That's just, it could be years later, it could be not relevant. It's just beyond what would be considered normal suspicions of what could happen, and therefore Darchei Darchei Noam says we're not going to lock her in for the rest of her life because of this. That's one way you could say it. Or you can say Darchei Darchei Noam is that we're going to have a standard policy, which is that at the time of death, that is the determination. Whatever is true at the time of death, that is going to determine, and whatever happens afterwards is irrelevant. And that's what Darchei Darchei Noam means, that everybody has the same rule. The rule is, at the time of death, you determine what is the status. We're not going to go reopen the case later on. So one of those two ways is to explain it. Then the Gemara says, "V'nasem meitim kechayim linyan truma." Well, now that we know by yibum that the meitim are like chayim, let's reverse the kal v'chomer and now say that by the truma it should be that way. Why? In the case of yibum, the child from the first husband is not relevant at all, and yet asam meitim kechayim. And nevertheless, we said that those that pass away have a status as if they're alive. In the case of truma, where the child from the first husband does have relevance after the second husband passes away, certainly over there, those that pass away should be as if they're alive. And here she doesn't have them. No, here we have a pasuk that says she has no offspring. implying that if she does have offspring, it's a problem. But if she doesn't have offspring, then it's out. The picture's gone. So we have a specific pasuk by Shuma that tells us offspring, when they're alive, matter. When they're not there, they don't matter. Now the Gemara moves on. V'nasev v'lad min rishon, k'v'lad min hasheni. So let us say that the v'lad rishon should be like v'lad sheni, l'inyoni boom. This is somewhat of a crazy havamina. There are those that try to explain it, but it's basically suggesting that her child from the first husband should cover her marriage to the second husband, and therefore there should be no yibum over here. That the second husband, even though he passed away childless, nevertheless, since she had a child from the first husband, that's enough to be yakum hashem achiv. That'll be that child will count towards the second husband as well. Again, it's a very far-fetched type of havamina. There are those, again, the Achronim tried to explain why that is in this case. The easiest way to say it is that the Gemara is just playing here and trying to get all the limudim out of the psukim, and it's doing it through this methodology, and they say it's not really serious about it here. But there are those that take it seriously and try to explain how that would be, that the shame of the child, when she gets married to the second husband, that child becomes as if it is the child of the second husband. The stepson basically becomes the son of the second husband. And therefore, when he passes away as a child, that stepson can act as a protector against Yibum. That's the way you would have to explain it. Mikal v'chomer. Omam v'malkom shalasa meitim kechayim by truma, where those that are niftar are not like those that are alive. Linyin truma, but by truma, sev v'lad min rishon k'v'lad min hasheni. The child from the first marriage has impact even on the second marriage. Makom shalasa meitim kechayim by Yibum, where those that are passing away are as equivalent to being alive. Linyin Yibum. Certainly over there, then the child from the first husband should have impact on the second husband. Tamal Omar, Ubein Ein Lo. Pasuk by Yibum says he doesn't have a child. Vaha Ein Lo. He doesn't have a child. The governing situation over here is him, not her. If she was the one to be determined, maybe over there you could argue the stepson is enough to get her out of Yibum. But over here where it says Vein Ein Lo, this is about the individuals married over here. It's whether he has a child or doesn't have a child. He doesn't have a child in this case. Now, one more. Let's reverse this now. Now that we know by Yibum that the child from the first husband has no impact on the second husband, let's say the same thing by Truma, that the child from the first husband has no impact once she marries the second husband. Mikal v'chomer. Omava malkum shasa meitim k'chayim lefotra mina Yibum. In Yibum, where those that pass away are as if they're alive, lo asav v'lad min rishon k'v'lad min hasheni. And over there, because of the pasuk, we say that the child from the first husband has no impact on the second husband. Makom shlo asav meitim k'chayim l'inyan truma. By truma, where those that are niftar no longer have impact, like they're as if they're alive, inu din shlo asav v'lad min rishon k'v'lad min hasheni. There certainly it should be true that the child from the first husband should have no impact when she marries the second husband. Tamal Omar ain la, that the determining factor over here is Zera ain la, that she doesn't have. V'ha and she has Zera. This child is associated with her, even though it was from the first husband. But since it's associated with her, Yeshla, and therefore she's governed by the son from the first marriage, even though she already made a second marriage. And with that, we end the Perek Adran Alach Yesh Motorot. Now we begin the Mishnah from the next Perek. As Tosafot points out over here, there are some times when someone is mutar or pasul and shuma maser. They brought this perek afterwards. That's talking about this. Happens to be a sidebar in this perek that these things happen. But because we've been talking about disqualification from shuma maser, this Mishnah and this perek also mentions the same type of concept. Even though it's topically somewhat different, nevertheless, it is connected to the previous parak, and that's why it's here. So, Aisha shalach balad midinat hayam is a woman whose husband traveled overseas, not like today where you travel overseas and you're in communication all the time, you travel overseas over there. There could be long durations of time where you have no word from the person, you have actually no idea that they're alive. Unfortunately, in this year, or this past year, it's happened twice now, where planes have disappeared suddenly, and you have this issue, which is we have no idea where the husband is, and this will come up later in the parak, and this is a discussion about agunot. When can you determine whether the husband is really out of the picture or not out of the picture? But here's a situation, he travels overseas, And they come back and tell her, your husband passed away. And based on that, v'niseit, she goes in and gets married based on the testimony that they said that her husband had passed away. V'achakach babala. Oh, and then a surprise happens, and her husband, who's supposedly dead, shows up. So now what happens? Teze mizeh umizeh. She has to divorce her new husband as well as her original husband. Tzricha get mizeh umizeh. She needs a divorce, a bill of divorce, both from her original husband and from the new husband. Vein la ktuba, v'lo peirot, v'lo mizonot, v'lo bloot, lo alzeh, v'lo alzeh. Again, this is similar to the previous perek. She now loses her ktuba, and most likely her tosefik ktuba as well. V'lo peirot, again, we discussed in the previous perek what lo peirot means over here. Most likely means that she's not entitled to the peirot that he ate. She will not get those back. Tosafot says she's not entitled to be redeemed by the husband because pirkonah is tachet peirotah and he doesn't have to pay for it. V'lo mizonot, she's not entitled to mizonot. If she borrowed money to eat mizonot, she is responsible for the loan, not her husband. V'lo blaot, again, here was machloket Rashi and Tosafot. Rashi says that if the clothing is worn down, he doesn't have to return it to her. Or Tosafot says that if the clothing is worn down, he has to pay for the diminution in value. Lo azeh, v'lo azeh, she doesn't have a right to collect from either of the husbands. V'im natla mizeh mizeh, if she took any of these items from either of the husbands, tachzir, she has to give it back. She has no entitlement to this money whatsoever. V'avlad mamzer mizeh mizeh, the child born from both marriages are problematic. They are mamzerim. So now mamzer in both instances. Now, as far as the children from the second husband, it's clear why they're mamzerim de oraita. Mamzerim from the first husband, the children were born before her husband went overseas, shouldn't be relevant at all, because they weren't subject to this issue of mamzerut. The only situation is if her husband comes back and remarries her, and he does not divorce her, which is an illegal marriage, but if he does that, we're going to call those children mamzerim at this point in time, even though she divorced the second husband. And that's what Tosfot says. Even if the first husband gives her a get, the children from the second husband are mamzerim. Same way like with the first husband, if she has children with him now, they will be mamzerim. And in both directions, they are mamzerim, even if one of them has divorced at this point in time. There are rishonim that argue on Tosafot. And you can see, Rabbi Kiv Eger already mentions it here, that there are Mishonim that believe if there was a bill of divorce given, then you can no longer call them Mamzerim from whichever one she's married to. It may be a problematic marriage, but it will not be Mamzerim. It won't produce a Mamzer. So now, what we have here is that, in each of these instances, she's married Doraita to her first husband, and she disqualified it from all of these items, me Doraita, because she had a quote-unquote an extra marital affair. With regards to the second husband, she wasn't entitled to anything because she wasn't supposed to be married to him. So therefore, all those disqualifications are midrabanan. The Rabbanan imposed it. Now, even with the first husband, you're going to claim she was an ones. What could she have done? In a case where she is raped, we don't say that's an extramarital affair. So to over here, this is the equivalent of an ones because what she was supposed to do, that the Gemara will discuss as to what the exact scenario here is in the first part of the Mishnah and why we blame her for what has happened. Now, neither of the two husbands here have rights to whatever she finds or her output. Neither has the right to nullify her nidarim. These are privileges granted to the husband. In this case, those privileges are taken away for both of the individuals that were married to her. Haida bat Yisrael, and if she was a bat Yisrael, nifsla min kuhuna. At this point, she's psula de kuhuna because the bia that she had with the second husband was an extramarital affair, and that makes her psula lekehuna. Ubat levi min maser. If it's a bat levi, she's now disqualified from eating maser. Ubat kohen min truma. If she's a bat kohen, she's disqualified from eating truma. Vein yoshim shel zeh v'yoshin shel zeh yoshin ktubata. Neither of the parties, neither of the children born of either marriage, inherit her ktuba. Vein meitu. If they die, achiv shel zeh v'achiv shel zeh chotzim v'lo miyamim. Both Yevamim over here will give her, do Chalitza with her, because we're not going to let her do Yibum for sure, because the problematic marriage is around, but we're going to force them to do Chalitza, because one of them is a problem, Mido, right, if you don't do Chalitza, and the other one's a problem with the Rabbanan, if you don't do Chalitza. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ktubata, Nechsei Bala Rishon. Her Ktuba is recourse on her first husband. We'll see what that means in the Gemara. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Rishon Zakai, Bemitziata, Masei Yedeva, Farat Nidara. The first husband has entitlement to her mitziot, her masiyadeh, and hafarat nedareh, because he is the real husband over here. He's the husband midoraita. Rishimon Omer, biata ochalitzata meachiv shel rishon poteret zarata. If she has biya or chalitza with the brothers of the first husband, they release the co-wives. Because there it's doraita. Ve'van avlam yemenu mamzer, because she really has to perform ibum here, midoraita. Her real marriage is to the first husband, midoraita. The second marriage was problematic from beginning to end. She married a husband who went overseas.
Right.
Thinks she's dead.
Right.
Marries a second husband.
Right.
Okay, now her husband comes back and she realizes it was all a big mistake.
Right.
And after her husband comes back, he passes away.
Right,
the first husband passes away. If she performs ibum with one of the brothers, midoraita, technically that's the right thing to do. But because of the knas chachamim, we always say don't do it. But if she does it, then it goes through, and it releases her co-wives, and the child born is not going to be a mamzer. Bimnei seich lo birshut, if she gets married without permission, muteret lachzor lo, then she can return to him. Niseit al pi beitin, she gets married by the word of beitin, beitin gave her psak halacha that she can marry, tetzei uptura min hakurban, she has to divorce him, but she doesn't have to make a korban, because she did something wrong, b'shogeg, because she basically gets indemnified by Beit Din because they gave the Psak Halacha. Lo niseit al pi Beit Din, if she married not with the Psak of Beit Din, Tetzei, again, she has to get divorced, v'chayevet korban. In that case, she's chayevet the korban because she doesn't have the indemnification from Beit Din. And therefore, now she has to make a korban for the mistake that happened, the extramarital affair that happened by mistake. Yafeh koach Beit Din shepotra min korban. Misha states, but it's obvious from the case of here that the Beit Din has a stronger hand here because they're able to release her from the korban, they indemnify her. Horua Beit Din linasei, if Beit Din gave her a psak halacha that she's allowed to go out and get married, balcha v'kilu kala, instead of getting married, she goes ahead and has an affair, relationships with other people, thinking that her husband's dead. Then, chayevet b'korban, shlo tirua lo linasei. Because when the Chachamim released her from her first husband, they only released her to entitle her or qualify her to marry. They didn't release her so then she can go out and be promiscuous. And that behavior was not condoned by Beit Din or granted by Beit Din. And because that's the case, they won't indemnify her for that type of behavior. And she'll have to bring a korban in that case. Now the Gemara says, Migdiktani seifa niseit shelo birshut mutaret. From the second half of the Mishnah, it says that when she gets married without permission, she's muter lachzor lo. That means that she's entitled to go back to him. Shelo birshut Beit Din, ela be'edim. That means that, what does it mean shelo birshut? Shelo birshut again, she can't, she just got married. She just got married thinking her husband's dead. There's no way that the Mishnah and them they would say that she's okay. The case must be, what does shelo birshut means? Shelo birshut Beit Din. She didn't get a psak halacha from Beit Din, ela be'edim. But she got it from edim, and she didn't necessarily do anything wrong because she has shnei edim here. She has two edim, which are fine edim in terms of erva, and therefore she believed the two edim, and since she believed the two edim, she here is a complete ones. She here had no ability to know otherwise because she has testimony to the fact that her husband has passed away, and therefore she's an ones. Then she can return to her original husband because it really wasn't an extramarital affair, it was something that was out of her control, and that's why she's allowed to return. Michlau, from that you would infer dereisha b'shut Beit Din ubeid achad. That the first case in the Mishnah is a case where she has a psak halacha from Beit Din, but there was only one witness. There's only one witness, then, midoraita, that one witness is not going to solve your problem. So then that's why we have a knas in the first case that she loses out on both sides when there's one eid. Now we'll explain why that is in a second. Alma eidachet neman. From this you see that an eidachet is believed. So now the Gemara's conclusion leads at this point thinks that eidachet is neman. And since he's Neman, he has enough power to alter the situation over here and say that if she gets married to another party, it's enough that Beit Din gave her a psak halacha based on the Eid Echad, but she'll still be penalized. So Gemara says, if it's not Nami, the Mishnah says the same thing. They already have a practice of allowing a woman whose husband's overseas to get married based on testimony of one witness to another. Hearsay. It wasn't direct testimony, but it was one person telling another person the information. Or, v'isha mipi isha, or a woman hearing from another woman. V'isha mipi evet, umipi shifcha. Or an isha hears this from an evet or from a shifcha. In all these cases, these aren't kosher edim. Nevertheless, we are believing them in this instance. Alma, what do you mean from this? Edechad Meman, that an Edechad is believed, that Edechad has enough power here to say that we allow her to get married based on that Edechad. Where it says, Bitna Nami, and we also have a Mishnah that says, Edechad Omer Achalta Chalev. One Ed comes along and says, you ate Chalev, which is fats that are Asurim. V'Omer Lo Achalti. And he says, I didn't eat it. Patur. There he is, Patur, from bringing a Kurban. Taima Damar Lo Achalti. That's only because he said, I didn't eat it. He denied it. He was machish, challenged the aid, or he disagrees with the aid's testimony. So it's him against the aid. So in that case, we say, patur. He doesn't have to bring a korban. Taimo damar lo achalti. That's only because he spoke up and said, I disagree and I did not eat it. Ha ishtik. Had he been silent over here, Neman, the eid echad would have been Neman in that case. So here's more evidence of the fact that when one eid comes and testified, he is believed. Alma, eid echad me'em in me'adoraita. From here you can conclude that an eid echad is Neman even in Torah law. Because over here we're telling him, don't bring a korban, which is Torah law, because of the eid echad. By the Yibum case, we're allowing her to get married based on an eid echad. So minolon, how do you know that an eid echad has power mina Torah? The Tanya, it says in the Pasuk, Hudai lav chatato asher chata, he becomes aware of the chait that he did. Velo shiudu achirim. He has become aware of it, but not that other people tell him about the chait. Yochol af pi she'enu machisho, yei patur. If he doesn't deny that which the aid says, you think there he'd also be patur. Tamad omar, Hudai lav mikom akom. No matter how he finds out about it, he's got to deal with it. Say chidami. What's the case here? If two witnesses come and he does not disagree with them, I don't need a pasuk to teach me that that's good, because that's a basic case of trei edim, which are believed in any other case in Shas. Anytime you have testimony of two edim, they are believed. So then what do I need a pasuk to teach me that two edim are believed? That's of course the case. Elav chad must be the case talking about one aid. When he doesn't deny it, he is believed. Shma mina, eid echad ne'eman. From here you see that an eid echad is ne'eman, because the case there that we talked about, admission versus not admission, we're talking about a case of eid echad, and we see that the eid echad is believed when he's silent. The Gemara says, umimayd mishum demehemen. How do you know that the reason that we believe him over here is because the eid echad is ne'eman? Dema mishum dekashotik. Maybe it's because the defendant is silent. Ushtika keholda adami. And when you're silent, it's admitting to what's being said over there. Teda, I'll prove that to you, diktani seifa. Because the latter half of that Mishnah says, Amru shnaim achalta chelev. Two witnesses come and say you ate chelev, v'uomer lo achalti. And he says, I didn't eat it. Patur. Even in the face of two edim, he's patur. But Rabbi Meir Michayev, Rabbi Meir says he's chayav because it's two edim. And Rabbi Meir says, Rabbi Meir, kavachomer, imivyo shnaim lidei mita, chamura. If you have two witnesses that come along and say that he did something wrong that he would get the death penalty for, we would put him to death based on those two witnesses, then lo yivyo lidei korban akal. They can't be mechayiv him here, a korban, which is a much lower level of incrimination versus having to get a death penalty. So of course the two edim should be believed over here. Why is his denial meaningful over here? Amrulo, they respond to him, over here, he has a way out of the problem. Because he could have said mezid ayiti. Now, a person's not allowed to change their testimony. Over here, he says lo achalti. I didn't eat it. So Tosfot explains in the next daf, when he says lo achalti, means lo achalti mimenu shogeg ela mezid. We can reinterpret his words to say this and not change his original testimony. And since he has a way to basically agree with the edim, and make it that he's not chayav in a korban, because the edim can't testify as to whether he's a shogeg or a mezid, that's something that's in the mind of the individual. So since he can verify the testimony of the edim, or accept the testimony of the edim, and still get himself out of a korban, then the edim can't force him to put a korban when he says lo achalti. Now Tosfot does ask, in a case where he says lo achalti shogeg u'mezid, then can you reinterpret his words in that case? And there Tosfot leaves it with a tzarachiyun, because maybe in that case he would not be Ne'eman, because he already stated something that won't allow us then to reinterpret his words to get him out of a korban, because now he's just being machish He's just denying what the Edim are saying. Now, Gemara says, Reisha, my time will come, Echai de Rabbonon. Why in the Reisha do the Rabbonon say is Chayav? Ilema Mishum de Hemehemin. If you say it's because he's believed, so why in the Reisha where it was an Eid Echad that came and testified and he was silent? Why in that case the Rabbonon say you're Chayav? If you say Mishum de Mehemin, if you say the reason is because we believe the Eid Echad, he has Nemanut Midoraita. But then Seifa, the Rabbanan say that even if you have two Edim, Avagav de Kamahashilhu inu mehemni, in any other situation where you have two Edim and he denies what they're saying, they are believed. But Bekatre Rabbanan, the Rabbanan still say you're patur in the Seifa. Elam mishum de ishtik. It must be because he is silent. His silence is acquiescence in the Reisha, and the same will be true in the Seifa. His silence is acquiescence. And that's why the Eid Echad is believed over here. It's not really believed. It's really the shtika that's generating it. Ushtika goda damyo. And silence is what generates it, as if there's an admission over here. And therefore, from this Mishnah, we can't prove that Eid Echad is neman d'oraita. The only thing we can prove is that when the defendant is silent, shtika goda. And that shtika goda is what is incriminating him in these cases. And not because the Edim are believed, because in the latter half of that Mishnah, we find that the Chachamim say even when two Edim come, he is able to deny what they're saying and not have to bring a korban, which would not be true in any other circumstances. Certainly in the case of the Reisha, where Daimon Eid Echad, it's not the Nemanut of the Eid Echad that's doing it, it must be the Shtika of the defendant which is doing it. And Shtika Hoda is what's generating the Nemanut over here. As Tosafot points out, Kaven Deshotik Nirlo Emet, must be the reason he's silent is because he thinks it's true. And he also knows that there's some circumstantial evidence to that fact. You can't say that shtika means literally an admission. That he knows for certain that it's that way. Because he's silent. If he thought it was 100% that the Edim were right, he should have said that the Edim are right. The fact that he's silent, we will interpret his silence as being acquiescence, but acquiescence in the sense that yes, it's probable that that was the case because we have circumstantial evidence in that, leaning in that direction, but not as if he said 100% that I agree or I admit to what the Edim say. So now the Gemara thought that the reason that Eid Echad helps out over here by the case of the Aguna when her husband's overseas and he testifies to the fact that her husband passed away is because Eid Echad was Neman, that an Eid Echad is believed. The Gemara shows through the proofs that I was bringing that Eid Echad is Neman, that Eid Echad doesn't necessarily work because of his Nemanut. It's not necessarily because he's believed that the Eid Echad has power over here. It's really the reaction of the defendant that gives this power, and that is that his silence is acquiescence. So then we're going to have to come up with a different way to explain why Eid Echad works in our Mishnah, because it's nothing to do with Nemanut. In our Mishnah, there's no concept of Shtika Gohoda because there's no defendant in the case of the Mishnah. So why is Eid Echad Neman in our Mishnah? That we'll continue with in tomorrow's daf, five lines down on the top of Pei Chet Amud Aleph.